Okay, this is just a work session of the North Dakota Public Service Commission. All three commissioners are here. We don't have to go through the formalities like an informal or a formal hearing. One thing I do just want to point out, what's on the screen is not a document in this case or anything. I just asked Matt to bring up a Google map of that area kind of surrounding the proposed facility. And if you look at it, like, you know, you see the triangle there and about two-thirds of the way to the right, and on the bottom is the southeast corner of the proposed facility. And then if you went straight up from there, you'd get to the intersection that was... Oh, yeah.
For someone like me.
So there's the southeast corner. This is that road going up, and this intersection was talked about quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And then here's the rail facility, and this is the intersection where they've said that they want their traffic to go. You know, you kind of come down here and get over and make the loop to get on the highway. So that's all that's up there. It's not a dock, but I know in discussing the case with staff, there's been a couple times when we come to the conclusion that one of us is talking about one intersection and the other's talking about the other intersection, and we have to regroup. So I just thought this might be helpful, and we can go in or out of the map. But anyway, with that, did you have any opening stuff? I'll turn it over to you, Julia's portfolio.
All right, thanks.
Oh, one other thing I'd like to say.
Sure.
I think this is a case that has huge potential positive impacts to the state if we can, you know, appropriate and safely and reasonably process more of our natural gas into finished products, allows for potential enhanced, not enhanced oil recovery, but additional oil recovery, if, you know, because then we don't have to flare the gas or wonder what to do with it. So huge potential positive impact, and now we got to make sure that we mitigate any adverse impacts.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you, Andy. Jack, I can't remember. Were you our attorney at this site?
Yes, I was.
Oh, you were. I have to think back to, where were we? Oh, the hotel, International Inn or whatever, right? Was it called the International?
Whoa.
The former International. In Williston.
Ooh. Was Williston.
Yeah. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I'm just reorienting my brain to the room.
Sure.
And Jack, where we were.
It was the International.
Yes. That means,
well,
that
they might call it
states,
something different now.
This proves that compared to many states, we've done a lot of sighting here.
Yes.
The Grand Williston Hotel.
The Grand.
That's right, the Grand.
Yeah. Yes, the Grand. Okay, so we left that hearing with a few, we got a few of the late filed exhibits. And so I don't have any big questions on those. Maybe we should go over the sound map, but the other, and the sound and the residence map. Randy, you might have some questions on the soil management plan. But the big outstanding issue, I think, was the coordination with DOT. The letter that Randy sent to DOT, and then the response that we got back from them. So, obviously, the biggest question I felt like from the hearing was the traffic issues and questions about sound, because they're obviously worried about that with some of their experiences with the Bitcoin mining facility out there. So I thought we could just go through these late file exhibits, and then if you guys have questions, just jump in. Does anyone want to talk about the soil management plan?
I'm okay on that. I'll have a question on the agreement with the irrigation district. I just don't know what the result of that testimony was, but
okay.
But that's not soil management. So.
Right. All right. Tree and shrub. Anybody have issues with their tree and shrub? Okay. Then that brings us to the residence maps and the sound modeling, which was the third and fourth late fall exhibit, which came with in docket number 57. So Jack and Victor, do you guys want to talk at all about the late file exhibit 22? That's the map, residence map. There really aren't any requirements here for setbacks, right?
Just getting to the right page. This is all topsoil stuff.
Commissioner, I guess in relation to the sound.
Yeah.
Oops, the opposite thing. In relation to the sound of decibel levels, there are no requirements for that. And there is the 500-foot setback, but that is the sole setback requirement under the siting law that exists.
Is there for this? I don't think
is
there's
that solely
a setback
for transmission lines, or is that for the...
That's for pipelines. Transmission pipelines.
Sound, I believe we only have the sound limitation on wind
for the
farms.
For the wind farms, but for the setbacks from a facility.
Setback is for transmission only.
Mm-hmm. Right. We had that discussion during the I apologize. Looking back, we had that discussion during the actual siting hearing.
I think that's we did,
right.
Yeah.
Yep.
So there is no setback to any of the infrastructure that they're building required in law.
Right. Nothing's specifically laid out in laws or regs unless we feel the need to set some sort of requirement specifically in this one.
So in the late file exhibit, the company spells out the distance from house 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 from the project boundary. And they did point out that the distance will be further from actual infrastructure. So, and then if you go to the next page, actual pages aren't marked, but the next page just shows there's the memo, and then there's the list of the houses and their distance. And then there's the sound modeling, the first phase. Phase one noise model, which just covers the first phase and shows how those houses are impacted. And it looks like house number R1 is in the 50 to 55. The other ones are in the 45 to 50, if I'm looking at that correctly.
Yeah.
In phase one.
In phase one. And then R4 is also in phase one. Then when you add phase two, combine, then four of them, one, two, receptor 1, 2, receptor 9, and 4 are all in the yellow, which is 50 to 55, and then just one of them is in the 45 to 50.
Was I think one was like 56, wasn't it?
Or 4.
Oh, 56. I'm just looking at, I'm just looking at the color. So yeah, that looks like it's 56 by the words, but it's not really in that dark yellow triangle. Doesn't look like it's in there, but maybe it should be. So
that's close.
It's close, yeah.
It's very close. I mean, when we compare it to wind towers, I mean, some of them, I mean.
Your sound thing, your bike is not very sound thing.
Speaking
sound
of sound.
Magnifier, a.k.a. microphone.
Yeah, I looked at that, and, you know, from the hearing to here, I think that's a high concern on the sound, even though we don't have setbacks. I mean, I don't know what we can, if there's anything we can do, but I'm going to note for the record that it's concerning for me.
Randy?
Knowing the complaints we get about wind farms that are supposedly at 45, and then thinking of having this for potentially producing close to twice as much noise. I mean, it is a lot for those people to expect. However, I'm kind of looking at you, Jack. I don't think the law gives us any authority to do anything different. And one thing that's in here that if this gets approved, that perhaps it should just be mentioned. My recollection is the conditional use permit from Williams County expires before they're even going to start construction. And we could emphasize that anything having to do with noise is something for the local jurisdiction, but they're going to have to, despite our approval, they still have to meet the requirements, the local requirements, to get that certificate of conditional use permit approved, reapproved. So, I don't know, does that cover it, kind of? That people sometimes, in cases, have complained when our jurisdiction causes us to be the authority and they wish it was the locals. Well, in this case, I think it's the locals.
Your thoughts, Jack?
Sure. In relation to our authority to essentially take action on sound, I've quite honestly, what we're talking about enabling statutory language to provide the authority to do it, I think that's in the broad language of the Siting Act. And we have actually taken that action with wind farm siting, for example, where we went out and set regulations and set requirements. And similarly here, I think if there is a overarching public need for us as an agency to take action, we probably could take some precautionary measures to mitigate sound.
You mean just for this project or to go about out and do a separate like rule setting?
Well, I mean, ideally, it's always been this agency's practice to take steps to provide regulations to guide the process. It provides regulatory certainty as well as ensures it prevents a lot of development from happening and a lot of work to be done without an ad hoc sense,
right.
Changing of the framework at the back end of the siting process. But there has been times and there have been situations where this commission has felt that there was a public need to, in an individual case, to take actions and start the process of setting the groundwork for consumer protection and customer protection. I'm not sure if that this is the case. This would be a departure from probably what we've done in the past. And so that, of course, is up to your discretion.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to hear that discussion as well.
Do either of you remember in the hearing what the company said they can do to mitigate the sound from these structures? Because we did talk extensively about it.
I don't know that I recall all of the things they had suggested, but I mean, certainly, trees and those kinds of things can help mitigate sound propagation, but it has to go somewhere. I mean, you can kind of redirect it, but it goes somewhere.
Well,
so,
when I look at that map and did some review on it, so I'm looking at this first phase one, that R9, that 46, and if you look at that, when you talk about tree mitigation, I'm like, it's right up against it. I think Commissioner Fedorchuk has a good question. I mean, about some of the mitigation. I'm like, I think in some of the incidents, it's plausible, but in other stuff, I don't know if it is plausible.
Sure. Well, honestly, for R9, if you kind of look at the map on the Cerulean side of the property line there, they have a significant buffer. That's basically where there's already a creek that runs through there. They could put additional shrubbery on both sides of that creek.
For shrub.
Yeah. It's
shrubs doesn't really, or that doesn't.
And
really
shrub is
it
a
needs
bad
to
term.
Be more of a hard surface, from what I recall from sound experts. But, or I was thinking even like, is there insulation in the building or mufflers or different ways like the company can reduce the sound at its source.
the actual operations of the plant.
Right.
Like sound barrier walls, I don't remember what they put up in Williston for the Bitcoin, but, you know, wall went up, but the benefits of something like that, I don't know if it's...
Doesn't sound like they've been very beneficial.
Right.
I
know that wasn't discussed during the hearing. My recollection.
When you asked what they said about it, these are my notes for whatever level of accuracy fast notes are. And this was Ms. Harding. Noise modeling, first of all, does not include final specs of equipment under design. So the spec, it could be louder yet, maybe, or it could be less loud. They're continuing to look at noise mitigation to the greatest extent possible. Williams County included a requirement for a sound buffer, and the sound buffer is a combination of special fence, trees, and a soil stockpile.
Say that again.
I remember that now, the soil stockpile.
Say that again about Williams County again.
My notes indicate she said that Williams County included a requirement for a sound buffer, and then that would include fence, trees, and the soil stockpile.
I think the best way for us to address it is to reference what Williams County is doing, and they have the ability to refresh that if it's not working down the road, because we didn't cover it enough in the hearing to recommend something at this point different. And I wouldn't want to second guess what the county is already doing. But I am comfortable referencing that. And, you know, if we want to take separate action to develop sound standards for all permitting, then we should do that. But I'm not real comfortable on an ad hoc basis without a lot of discussion in the hearing to support us going on it on our own. I'm not super comfortable with that.
My recollection with the wind, why we did take that action and move in that direction, was due to the unique nature of wind noise. It's not a steady state sound, as intermittent noise comes in and out as a result of the blades. So I think the sound from wind farms may be a bit unique, and from that standpoint. And I think in relation to the discussion of the county, that may be appropriate in this situation, due to the fact that it seems like this is an industrial area that's already going to be developed near a township, so it isn't. This is within the normal purview of industrial development for a township, city, and locality. So with that in mind, I think that may be appropriate in this specific case.
With something like this, that's facility-based is the right term, but I think of this on a site like that being more similar to that data processor north of town than to a wind farm. Mm-hmm. It's a benefit of having a time limit on a conditional use permit. Williams County probably has more experience with these noise issues from a facility like this than we do, and they get another crack at their CUP.
Yeah. Isn't the data processing facility right out near this, too?
I think it's further north and east of Trenton, if I recall correctly.
North and east.
You can move it on Google Maps.
Yeah.
There also is the developmental aspect of this, since they did provide there's a likelihood of development within this locality. You probably have an intermixing of a jurisdictional resource such as this, as well as non-jurisdictional industrial facilities as well, which for sound could make the modeling to a degree obsolete, but also would probably make it difficult for enforcement to actually try to find which source would be providing that sound.
My takeaway was when we were looking at this regarding the sound, how we brought up the Mandan Refinery, the sound and the lights and a more comparison of that, and I have that more of that image in my head versus the data center. I mean, sure, the noise reflection, but just the overall, and the the noise modeling, saying it's just the modeling, but we don't know. You know, it's ongoing. It's a moving target. And that... it's kind of concerning because we can't really wrap our hands around it.
Right.
And to have that type of constant sound. And then I'm going to throw in lights, too, because that could be a barrier, too.
Right. Yeah, and I was just pointing to the fact that the broader development of that area
It
will likely reduce the overall impact from this facility if that does occur.
All right. Anything more? So are we comfortable referencing the Williams County work on sound and requirements and addressing the sound in that way?
Yeah, I mean...
I think that's probably the best we can do is clarify so Williams County knows that it's not in our administrative rules or law, and it isn't on... It does fall on them.
Yeah, okay. All righty. Then let's... do you want to talk about one question before we go to the DOT stuff? Or maybe you had others, Randy. Thought we could end with the DOT.
Okay, then I have a few.
Yeah, perfect. And you too, Sharon.
Yep, thank you.
So, in the testimony... Mr. Hoffman, and I believe he said he's on the Irrigation District Board, and said they're needing more discussion about the drainage easement here. So I didn't get a lot of notes on that, but is that just something that is completely among them, or does this facility need an approval from the Irrigation District, and so is that something... from our hearing that we should make note of in an order, if there's ultimately an order for approval, that emphasizing the fact that they need whatever approvals they need from the Irrigation District?
What I'm recalling, I think it was an access issue with that easement. So it would be within their fence line around the facility. So there was something to work out among the easement language.
That's right, because it's fenced, and then when the water runs through, if it plugs up the fence, or,
that's right. And it's on that map in the southeast corner is kind of where that drainage easement runs through.
Yep.
So to me, it seemed like a kind of a private easement issue that they just had to kind of work through the details of to a place that both sides are comfortable with.
So you don't think that to reference it in an order?
Unless Jack disagrees. I didn't see.
We could. I don't think it's an absolute necessity in this case.
We could just ask for an update, too, on those discussions.
I was going to say that to see if it's individually.
So you want to just leave it there? That we'll ask Sarah Lynn for an update on negotiations with the Irrigation District?
Yep, if all those have been addressed, the issues have been addressed there.
Okay. And my notes kind of conflict a little bit with themselves. Whether it's the Highland or Kinder Morgan, whichever is the actual owner, did I understand right that relocation of that pipeline will require siting approval?
Yes.
Really?
I believe it does.
I believe so. And so one of my questions is, if we were to approve this project... and then, presumably there's benefits here to that. But then they can't find a way to reroute that that gets our siting approval, maybe the detrimental impact of that is worse than the positive of zero lot. So should a approval order hinge on Kinder Morgan getting a siting approval?
But they're rerouting it right on the site.
I think it was,
right within the site. So I remember thinking that was a big deal, and then they said, but it's all going to take place within the, they're just moving it across the way on this site, I'm pretty sure. So then I thought, oh, well, that's not going to be a big problem, yeah. I don't think.
If that were the case, then wouldn't that mean it's less than a mile and doesn't need anything? So apparently
no,
it must
so
be off-site.
The less than a mile thing is during construction of the pipeline. After construction is complete, the mile thing doesn't apply.
Oh, yeah.
It's outside the corridor, which is the big thing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was on site. I'm looking at Casey.
I can't recall that specific one, because there were several that were.
Okay. Well, we should get an update on that.
Well, you know, kind of some standard language that we put in every siting order is the company must obtain all of the licenses and permits that are necessary for construction. And, I mean, we could leave it at that, which arguably would include the reroute of that line, or we could specifically call that out if you would prefer.
But maybe they don't care about one another and, you know, getting all the approvals for Cirilon doesn't, I don't know, maybe to them, that doesn't include Highland getting their approval. I just don't know what other options there are. It is a concern. I don't want to see them just get pushed aside by us approving something else over the top of it.
Can we get an update or clarification before?
Okay.
I'd feel more comfortable with that versus...
And we could come back with a proposed solution to that in
yep.
an order for you, if that's helpful.
I like that.
The rest of my concerns were traffic related.
Okay. Sherry, do you have any non-traffic related concerns?
Do we have any concerns about all, you know, the facility and the lighting? We just barely touched on that in the hearing. We talked about, you know, just a lot of lights, especially in the evening, bright. Is there any concern there that we...
I don't recall any of the landowners having light concerns.
That was just kind of made in reference.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I mean, at the end, like comparing it again, I'm going to go back to like the Mandan refinery, the sound, all the lights and all that. It was done in passing, I would say more, but...
There was one guy who did kind of generally refer to light, sound, and visual impacts.
Yep. And
and again, there aren't any requirements. There isn't requirements for light. I mean, if we had asked them more about it during the hearing, we'd probably have something to...
It is one of the criteria that we can consider for the siting act.
We can consider, well, yeah, we can consider it, but there's no standard that
right.
says, like, you have to.
Yeah.
On which to measure what's excessive or isn't, or, you know, and I don't think we explored it a whole lot.
Right, and I think it's specifically in relation to light-sensitive land uses.
Yeah.
And so I think the concept when it was discussed back when we had done the rulemaking was, there is a unique aspect or business that is reliant upon maybe darkness or that light would impede upon what they do, that would be heavily considered by the commission.
Let's see. Looking to see if they're offering anything. Well, I mean, we could mention it, that it was brought up as a concern by one resident, and we could, you know, state that there's no standard for the state to, there's no standard in the law for us to, for the company to meet, but again, they could work with the locals on their conditional use permit. Mm-hmm. We could address it that way.
Some of these certainly are issues that can be addressed on the local level.
Mm-hmm.
I think, too, that, you know, if you like and enjoy dark nights, you know, you're not going to be very happy about this coming up right next to your place. But I think that that is really more of a county zoning issue than it is a PSE issue.
Mm-hmm. We understand that, but
until it's something that gets assigned to us,
right,
more directly, or that, yeah, we've gone through a whole rulemaking process where the legislature can say, no, don't get your nose in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yep,
I agree.
So, there was one other thing Mr. Gorey brought up about all the many, many millions both the state and Williams County have given on this project, and why, what's the point of it? I don't know. I think there was point and counterpoint on that during the hearing. I don't, the why of our siting hearings have never usually been really addressed much, because we deal with minimizing adverse impacts of projects, supposedly the use of the dollars by the investors determines the why, and so I don't have any suggestions on that, but I just want a reminder if either of you did.
Mm-mm.
No. Yeah,
well, and we don't set the policies for this state on what gets incentivized and what,
right,
doesn't, and that's it's a legislator issue, not a regulator issue.
Okay, so then I think we can get the traffic.
Okay.
Unless you
The only thing I would add to that is at least in the application, there was discussion of using vegetative cover in relation to light for the nearby residences. Mm. But there, like you said, there was that discussion of that overarching and broader development and industrial use in the area, which, you know, you could block some lights, but not all lights that,
right,
may be coming.
Yeah. All right. So we go to the traffic issues. I thought that both the letters kind of laid out the issues and addressed them pretty well. And the bottom line on the DOT kind of response to our issues on the bypass, the turn lanes, on 1804 and the blocked rail was pretty straightforward. I was pleased to see that they expect the to add that turning lane, which seemed like the most urgent need. In response, UT has begun the project development for a turn lane at this intersection. Plans are expected to be ready for 2025 construction, pending the outcome of an identified need in the report. So assuming that there is a need there, which it seems like that would come up, that turn lane, which was referenced by multiple, mm-hmm, members of the public as being a significant safety issue, that turn lane should be in operation well in advance of them having this plant constructed. So that's number one. The Trenton-Marley Crossing ND Highway 1804 issue, not quite as clear. It's that they'd add a turn lane there. That's further further to the west. So thoughts on that one? That also, to me, didn't seem like as big of a concern from the public.
So I think the public tends to think people will travel the shortest route. I think that too. And so we heard most of the testimony about going up, is it 147th?
Yes.
Going straight north. However, the company said they want their traffic to go west and come out down at Marley Crossing. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I think they can want that, but I'm guessing that a lot of their workers will be from Williston and they're going to go the other way. And so I think that the turning lane out there is vitally important for all the people coming into the facility from the north are going to be trying to make a left-hand turn there, and you're going to have constant problems with southbound traffic. However, this level of traffic, trying to get around train blockages, go slow and make the train crossing, and then turn out onto that highway, this is a lot of traffic. And frankly, I think what's needed down there is an overpass at Marley Crossing. Mm-hmm. And apparently DOT thinks so too, because they've requested grants for 3 years in a row for one. And that's before all this traffic goes in. Mm-hmm. And so I think there clearly is a need. And I don't know whether it's in our jurisdiction or even whether it's fair and reasonable to require something like that. The company should invest in that. I will say this. When the coal mine needs to get under North Dakota Highway 1804 north of Beulah, they built an underpass when they needed to get over the top of county paved highway that goes to DGC and AVS. They built what we call the MOAB, the mother of all bridges, because it carries 300-ton trucks back and forth. Couldn't do an underpass because of the railroad. There's an old underpass on Highway 49 south of Beulah, and there's underpasses and stuff built all over. And the coal mine, that's a cost of doing business. And if they already have 3 years of trying to get grants to build an overpass, perhaps an overpass is needed. Is this a docketed item now, Jack?
I don't think it has been docketed yet, but it will be.
It's in. Yep. We can discuss it.
We can discuss it.
Jack sent out this morning.
Oh, shoot. I don't have that.
I'll make you one.
Yeah, he sent it out via email this morning.
So this indicates to me, and there's some confusing things in here. It says estimated traffic during construction. And then also mentions daily traffic trip summary. And this is for the first year of construction.
Who is this from? Can you just provide that?
From Cirilon.
From Cirilon.
Okay.
But then down in the bottom, it mentions trucks per hour. And so when they have 40 per hour for 11 hours of trucks, and then daily trips is 435, that's the total of it. So they apparently aren't taking into consideration the employees working there, going to and from, getting out there to run the trucks and maintaining the trucks and the running the excavators and doing the surveying. And there's a whole lot more traffic than this. I think we requested it. I don't know if we have traffic numbers for construction workers, but $3 billion project is going to have a lot of traffic.
So we did request that from the company, the total construction, so not the traffic specifically, but the headcount of construction workers. And at the peak of construction, it's estimated between 2,000 and 3,000 construction workers.
Now, how are 2,000 to 3,000 people going to get out of, in and out of here? especially if that's in one shift, maybe it's in two or three shifts, I don't know. But even if you divide that down by two or three, that is enormous amounts of traffic when part-time they get. I don't know if we can do anything to absolutely forbid the train from blocking the tracks. I don't
know. We have had very bad luck with that in the past.
And I tell you, I don't know if the solution is an overpass or somewhere along the line, the suggestion of a reroute down around through Buford, but I don't think the workers are going to do that. I think they're going to take the shortest route. One thing I've thought of, and I don't know if it's reasonable, but perhaps that construction traffic needs to be parked, not on site, but off site, up by Highway 2 or even at Williston or somewhere, and these workers need to be bused in and out, and there'd be a minimal amount of parking approved on site so that, you know, management, emergency vehicle stuff, deliveries can get in and out, but not have the automobiles to haul 2,000 to 3,000 people in and out of there on the road. So I don't know what to do about it, but this is a big problem for the people that have to live there. And can you imagine now the semi is full and you're ready to haul that load of grain to town and here it's shift change and you sit and wait. I can imagine it because I lived it years ago up at U1 Hazen.
So it's a great thought, Randy, and especially the block crossing, I could see that significantly exacerbating the problems. It looks to me on their site plan that, you know, this east road, the east road, where you think that it's 147th Avenue Northwest, unless they build like a road in there to the parking lot, it looks to me like all the buildings and the parking access will be on the west side of the site. So I don't know that it's likely that a lot of the employees would come down 147th because they wouldn't have access to the, they wouldn't have access.
It's even from the south
Point right.
west corner.
Here's it's underneath this. Julie's.
Even from down here, wherever the gate was going to be, it's still closer to get to Williston to come over. Oh, no, I'm over here by the rail thing. But even from down here where the gate's going to be, it's closer to go over here and up to get
There's
to
no
Williston.
There's no road, though. There won't be a road there.
Yeah, there will.
Look at the, this is their site plan. This is where the buildings and parking lot and stuff are going to be, over here.
Yes, but I believe they're paving 147th up to there.
Yeah, but are they going to have, is that going to be accessible to the parking lot? I mean,
if you come out of here and get on this, because they're paving this and this. So if you come out of here, what prevents you from, even though you were told when you're off work, why wouldn't you come over here and go up?
Well, yeah, is that a paved road?
My understanding was that it would be.
They had talked about plans to have both of them paved. There wasn't overly specific on the time frame, whether it was before or after construction is complete. They did commit to local residences that the primary entrance to the site would be on 42nd, that south kind of main gate you're talking about. The secondary access on 147th would be used only during construction, plant turnarounds, and emergency egress.
So they could have that shut off. I mean, they could have a gate there that doesn't allow the employees to get through there on the regular. If they've they did make a big point of that, they had committed that to that to those residents that live along here.
Well, I don't think those residences would tolerate the road getting shut down.
No, not the road, the access to their site, a gate here. Or here to access that they can't get in
what
there.
What I'm saying is if there's a gate down here to get out on this road to go west, then they can just as easily make a left turn and go east.
Well, I was assuming
that the
gates were on the east and the west side, not the south. But
no, the main access to the site would be on the south to 42nd Avenue, and then there would be an additional exit onto 147th from the east.
From the east, so there would be on the east side of the property over there an extra exit.
Right.
Which could be shut down.
They could shut down the exit, but I think the point Randy's trying to make, right. Like no matter where you leave the site, there's still nothing physically preventing workers there from using the 147.
Well, especially if they have to experience a bunch of delays getting out the other side.
But
they could probably get those same delays because the railroad could block up on that 147th as well. I think that's the one that gets blocked a lot.
147th gets blocked most often.
Yeah.
And then, Matt, would you, like, zone in more, but on Marley down here, get that up in the middle, and then zone in on it quite a bit more? It's to the west yet.
And then up.
West and up.
There's a little word that's, nope.
Go up. Nope.
Nope, other way.
Yeah. The other picture up.
The other up.
There's a word Marley on
and
there.
And so, here's my concern. When you are talking...
Still won't see it. Keep going down.
What I wanted to point out is on here. When you're talking about the truck traffic and all these people leaving, so they exit over here someplace. I think it was about here, but regardless. It's
further east, but close enough.
So they're all going to come over here. They have to make this corner and come down and make this corner to get on, and then they go across here and cross the railroad tracks, and they're finally home free on their way to Trenton or Williston. Hundreds, and remember, when we talk about all those workers, they're not spread out all over the day. They come in shifts. That is going to be waves of traffic. And I am really worried about that traffic volume across there.
And where's the school?
Way on the other side of Trenton. So it's to the north.
2.5 miles
north. Okay, yeah. Okay. I just want... Oh, there's Marley.
Yeah, the school is way on the other... Through Trenton and the other side of Trenton.
But they were talking about the traffic when they're trying to get to school and they're trying to get to work and all that too. So I mean the time, Randy, you're talking about the time. There are times when it's heavy congested, getting to school, people getting to work.
That's through town,
right?
And then they get out to this area, but they have to slow down to quite slow to get through town. If most of those people are coming from Williston, it's going to be a nightmare in town too.
Well,
It almost seems to me like it would be a benefit to the workers if that parking lot was up by Highway 2 and they had buses to haul the people back and forth and you didn't have hundreds and hundreds of vehicles trying to navigate this. I don't know if that's something the company would be interested in doing or not. But
that feels
sure
a little prescriptive to me.
Traffic
like,
problems.
I mean, from my standpoint, I wouldn't feel comfortable prescribing a solution. I think we can say what we don't like, what the problem is, but how it gets fixed, I don't think is necessarily our job.
We could do a request to the company requesting mitigation measures for traffic and see what they provide or what solutions that they may have.
And to be clear, I just want to clarify, the concern is during construction phases. Once it's operational, we don't have ongoing. I just wanted to clarify that. That's
What's the total again? We have the 2,000 to 3,000 during construction. Once constructed, what was the number again for?
That's a good question. Let's see.
I think it was a couple hundred.
That's what I was thinking. It's a couple hundred, but I didn't want to shoot from the hip.
How many permanent employees?
Yep. Sure.
Well, I can find it. I mean, well, I like Julie's recommendation as far as what, looking at what is the company's suggestion to mitigate the traffic concerns during construction.
Yep, we can. We're asking for a few updates from them. We could certainly ask for some.
Because that definitely was a resounding concern at the hearing. Safety.
Dang it.
I know I've seen that number too. I can't recall. It's an impressive number of good jobs up there.
On the projected economic impacts from the project, it provides that operation has a job creation of 1,700 to 2,800 positions.
How many?
So
long term?
Further up on that page. So during operation, there'll be approximately 100 direct employment opportunities with an additional 2,000 plus indirect and induced jobs created by the project.
For total job creation, right?
Okay.
So 2,000 direct jobs.
Indirect.
Oh. Five.
But during construction, sorry.
100 on-site jobs.
Right.
Yep. I think they were referencing like additional, you know, like truck drivers that would move product for them. That wouldn't be employees necessarily, but it would be induced jobs. I recall
and any
some discussion
suppliers,
about that. Yep.
Like they could.
Electrical contractors and pipe fitters.
Yep.
Various trades that needed to operate such a facility.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the best long-term solution for this site and for that whole area, because this isn't the last thing probably going there, is the bypass up to avoid Trenton. So just come off of Highway 2 further west and come through these hills out here. Avoid Trenton altogether, which they are talking about.
DOT did talk about it in their letter, mm-hmm. Kind of. I think they identified similar issues to what the local residents said when they talked about a bypass, and that's where would you put it?
And it still doesn't deal with the problem of what about when the road is blocked by the train. And so you start backing up all this traffic, and if you're the person that doesn't have anything to do with this and you're caught up in that all the time, that could be extraordinarily frustrating.
Right, as a bypass, so they could do an overpass.
Yeah.
So.
Did anyone have any ideas or thoughts on what to do about Trenton, the community itself? Because you know, that was also brought up that it mm-hmm. runs right past the school. In fact, during sports events, they park on both sides of this highway and walk across it. There's not a lot of good options there for.
Well, and again,
heavy traffic, but I think it's kind of Williams County commissioners know that.
I don't feel like it's our job to describe to fix those road problems. And DOT is looking at it. The topics being studied include additional turn lanes, a revised speed zone through Trenton, roadway lighting, enhanced roadway signage. The report recommendations will then be used to begin project development as appropriate. So they're very much looking at all these issues there, and I think the Trenton local officials are engaged with them and need to remain engaged, but I do think it's, you know, probably within the purview of siting to address the construction job impacts and site on that site, and ask them to tell us how those are going to be addressed. But I mean, if I was running DOT, I'd look at the bypass. But I'm not the DOT director or an engineer.
Well, you have fooled us, Commissioner.
I play one on TV. So we're getting updates from the company on that. On
the irrigation district, and then on the Kinder Morgan pipeline reroute.
Yes. Anything else?
So we're having traffic, Kinder Morgan, and the irrigation. Those three things from the company.
I would also like in their report how, if they heard us talking about our kind of differing impressions from the hearing of how they're going to restrict access to 147th, if they want to clarify that would be helpful. If they have any specific plans for how they're going to enforce their commitment to the locals that they aren't going to use 147th beyond an emergency, times of emergency, turnarounds, or construction.
But if it's during construction, that's a couple years of dealing
with this. Right, and we still need the update on how they're going to manage the construction issues.
Yep. Okay.
Anything else?
I think we've covered a lot of ground. And
good.
Kind of covered the things that were brought up in the hearing.
All right. I do hear a lot of talk from locals about, as people, and more I see it in the news, I see people in the West just frustrated that they have to still deal with some of these infrastructure issues when a lot of the tax dollars the state is getting are being sent to Bismarck and not necessarily they don't feel like a fair amount reinvested in the area to deal with the problems of the development. I think this is another example of that. You see over and over. So,
and that therein itself, and certainly the first years of this were before Cyrillon was here.
Right.
And DOT's been requesting an overpass, grants for an overpass. Now, presumably they don't request money for things just to waste it. So there was a need without this. That tells me that clearly when this is added, an overpass is needed as a whole starting point. So why not build it before you put people through a year or two of misery, instead of doing that, and then after a big chunk of the traffic is over, then build it. But I think we all know it's necessary, or they all know, or they wouldn't have been requesting the grants.
Amen. Maybe we don't need grants from the broke federal government.
It's easier if they just print it than to actually
take it from the tax dollars being generated by this industry. But anyway, all right.
They didn't ask us, right, Julie?
They didn't ask us. Thanks, you guys. So we should try to get... maybe give the company, they're eager for this permit too, I'm sure. But as soon as we get that, I do think it's important to wrap this up as soon as we can. So I would be open to us receiving that information. And then if we need another work session, you should request it. Otherwise, we'll move ahead with developing an order.
Okay.
Yep.
Once we get the information. Victor can follow up to see if anybody feels a need for.
Yeah.
I think we've expressed a lot of our concerns here.
Yeah.
Maybe they're all addressed so well that we don't need one, but if not, I agree. I'd like to see this.
Well, hopefully the response is solution driven versus words. I don't know.
All right. Very good. Okay. Thanks, everyone.
This work session is concluded.